So welcome to Confessions of a Serial Seller. Super excited to have my wonderful guest today. This lady is the CEO of Three Red Folders, which is both a sales and sales leadership agency in Melbourne, Australia. She's an international sales speaker, and she was a previous Tony Robbins master coach. Bernadette McKellen, thank you so much for joining me today.
It's my pleasure. Great to be here, Tony.
Thank you. So I always like to get a sort of a flavour of your background. If you can start by sharing with my audience a little bit about you and how, tell me a bit about your journey of how you got to where you are now.
That's just such a loaded question. I mean, we think back to, first moving into sales, I guess. And my first foray into corporate sales, I guess you could say, was through Xerox. So everybody knows Xerox as a company name, and I started off in order entry. I moved into credit. I became sales secretary, left and had my first child, came back after maternity leave and became another sales secretary, then became sales coordinator, where I was doing the guys' commissions and the orders and everything. And it was at that point in time that I looked at the amount of money that was being made, and I looked at the caliber of guys who was making it.
Yeah.
And I thought, holy dooly, if he can make that, then so could I.
Yeah, I love that.
And so I applied. The downside of that was that I had to apply three times, and each time they said no. And each time they said no, I didn't have what it took to be in sales, that I was too nice, and that I wasn't aggressive enough.
Interesting.
But they gave me the role, and I was at worked my way up, and when I did leave a number of years ago now, I had reached the pinnacle within Xerox in that particular point in time. So that then led me to forming my own business, doing what I'm doing now, but this was 20 years ago, and limiting beliefs got in the way. Now, I know you and I were talking before the call about limiting beliefs, and you shared your story. For me, I didn't believe that I had what it took. So that was probably a little bit of beliefs coming in from, the conditioning that I had been through in my role. So I left, and my husband and I both bought it together, naturally, a retail outlet where that allowed me to understand the retail side of business and understand what it was like to be a business owner. In retail, we successfully ran staff and a retail outlet. Then we bought out one of our national wholesalers. So once again, that gave me the opportunity to, elevate my level of understanding as to what a business goes through, from staffing and stock and cash flow and all of those things, because there was such a big disconnect from corporate and small business.
Yeah.
Because it's different. It's different language, it's different approaches, it's different selling and all the rest of it. During that time, I had an altercation with a forklift in our warehouse, and the forklift happened to win that fight. Yeah. And it did tissue damage to my shin. I was put on penicillin, right, and the penicillin shut my liver down.
Jesus.
And I was bedridden for just about a year. Wow. I was unable to get out of bed. So it was a huge disruption.
Of course.
As a result of that, my husband and I, we lost our business, we lost our houses, lost our job, all form of income, and 10 years ago we were on welfare.
Wow.
So we had to start from scratch at 50.
Jesus.
And yeah. So there was a lot we learned back then that stood us and that's put us in good stead for right now. Mm. And I'll probably share some of those with you, because some of the people on that are listening who are in sales, who are business owners, who are leaders, there will be something in that for them. However, I guess the journey back over a 10-year period, and we're back on track. We're in a really, really good space.
Yes, we're here.
It was just such a number of learnings, I guess, that came out of that, that apply to sales. And that is, you know, we all in one way, shape or another are going to face tough times.
Yeah.
And there are salespeople out there now that are on the verge of losing their jobs. Some of them have lost their jobs. You know, I was in London in 2018, and I opened up my keynote at the
Innovation conference. Show, yeah.
Yeah, it was Top Sales World. And I opened up with statistics saying that in 2020, 22% of the sales force will be gone. Like 1 million salespeople will be gone based on Forrester research.
Mm.
And that was due to AI.
Yeah.
Well, we're in 2020 now. And 22% of salespeople are losing their jobs, but it's because of some random virus.
Yeah.
So what can I, you know, with my journey and coming back into it, it's the similarities that, you know, I mean, it's same horse, different jockey.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, and what can I kind of, what can I help people understand through all of this from a sales perspective is that stuff's going to happen. And there's going to be a lot of pain and there's going to be a lot of grief and you're going to think that there's no light at the end of the tunnel. When in actual fact, if you can project 10 years down the track, and you can put some kind of a philosophical hat on and think, what if 5 years down the track, what if 10 years down the track, life is actually better than it is today as a result of what you're going through today?
That's an amazing outlook. I mean, my question to you is, how the hell did you and your husband pick yourself up when you, as you said, at 50 years old, you're on welfare? I mean, that, yeah, you know, that is so tough. How did you have the courage maybe or to get yourself out of such a dark place?
So we knew we were liquidating, we had to, and I was still in bed. So I was still,
wow,
could not function.
Wow.
And my husband in a previous life had been a repossession agent.
Really? Okay.
So he knew exactly what was going to happen.
That's hilarious.
So it was 3 months, 2 to 3 months before the banks actually physically changed the locks on our house.
Wow.
And it was 2 to 3 months prior. And what we did is he carried me into the back bedroom of a rental house, put me on a mattress, and then proceeded to bring the removalists with our stuff.
Wow.
So what we did is we changed our environment on our terms. Mm. And we kind of made that proactive step to change, mm-hmm, and to, you know, it's like anything. If you change your environment, then your results are going to change.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of people are working from home now, and yeah, that's an environment that's conducive to success, but it's also conducive to stress.
Totally.
You know, so our environment plays such a huge part in our mental and emotional health. Mm. So I guess changing our environment on our terms was one part of it. We didn't get a lot of cash out of the business because we didn't find out until the very end that the office girl had actually been banking all the invoices that were, you know, coming in, all our payment, were being banked into an account that only the bank could access.
Oh, blimey. Couldn't even get worse. Unbelievable.
So we only had about 2 weeks worth of cash flow, and we put that in a little evening bag under our mattress. It was kind of our nest egg. And then we looked at it one day and we said, geez, you know what, I started to get better. And so we looked at this and we thought, okay, we can do one of two things. I can go and get a job, because we're both on welfare, and Tim could go and get a job. And then I thought, both of those jobs were capped. You know, if I went and got a job, it's a capped salary,
yeah,
both of them.
Yeah.
So we rolled the dice. And we thought, let's take our cash and let's back ourselves and invest it in me.
Love that.
Because I had the opportunity to earn more than a capped income.
Yeah.
And so that was the beginning. And every time we kind of jumped two steps ahead, we would look at that cash and we would reinvest it. And so it's just been this, yeah, it's just kind of been this, I guess, sigmoid curve, you know, like hit a plateau, what do you do? Go up again.
Bernadette, it's honestly, it's inspiring to listen to because, you know, it all sounds easy when you say it, but I can't even imagine the position you're in where you were still bedridden going through that. So what's your number one bit of advice for salespeople that might be listening to this or sales leaders or who have either lost their job or maybe about to or thinking their business might go because of the pandemic? What's the first thing they should do?
That's such a really good question. You know, we get influenced by so many external influences. We get, you know, we take on board so much from outside of us. One of the things that I really got clear on was there's an exercise that I get my clients to do, and I get them to draw a tabletop. And I get them to draw, you know, if you've got a table which has only got one leg, it's going to fall over. Two legs, it's going to fall over. Three, it's wobbly. Four, it's become stable. So if we used the tabletop as our, and we wrote career.
Yeah.
You know, and it could be sales leader, but that's our career. And we need at least four table legs. And those table legs are reference points. Those table legs are the evidence that we have over the years of our worth, of our value.
Mm.
And so when my husband and I, you know, I got better and we went out on our second ever first date.
Yeah.
And he took me to the local pizza joint. And he says, whenever you tell this story, you've got to tell people it was gourmet pizza.
Yeah.
So anyway, we went to this local pizza restaurant and we sat there and I said to Tim, we have got to answer two questions. At 50, what is the value that we have to bring to the market? And what will people be prepared to pay for that value?
Great questions.
And doing this tabletop exercise helps a salesperson, a leader, an owner of a business, get very clear on the value that they have already been providing and that they will be able to provide in the future.
Yeah, that's amazing. That's really good, great advice. I love that. I know, you know, in your career, you've trained and coached so many salespeople. You've obviously been a master coach for Mr. Robbins. What have you, in your opinion, from all the people that you've worked with, what do you genuinely believe makes a serial seller?
Okay, so I'm going to flip that back to you for a second, and I'm going to ask you to give me your meaning of serial seller. So okay. I'm on the same page as you.
Now, that's a good, well, I like the technique you use there, so you see the world through my eyes. So my definition of a serial seller is, I think the word that comes to my head is consistency.
Yep.
Yeah. So someone who is on their A game on a consistent level, they outperform their peers, they outperform themselves on a regular basis. That's what I consider a serial seller.
Okay. Love that. Yes, I definitely agree with you there. And I guess that's the same as in any area of life. Whether it's sports, whether it's music, or whether it's sales, consistency is really important. I would agree with you there. I also would add to that congruence. Mm. I would add to that congruency. What I mean by congruency is, you know, we hear the word authenticity thrown around, just thrown around willy-nilly today, and it is totally, you know, in some cases out of context.
Yes.
We are all authentic. We were born authentic. We are still authentic. We just may not show up the way other people want us to show up. Therefore, in their eyes, we're inauthentic.
Yeah, that's interesting.
So, yeah. So what I would consider on top of consistency is that you are congruent, that what you say, you will do.
Yes. Yes, I love that. You deliver on every promise.
Yeah, and that's internal, you know, with work. It's with your clients. It's with, you know, your colleagues. And coupled with consistency, I think is really great. But, you know, I think underneath all of that, you need to want to be in sales.
Yeah.
You know, you need to have that desire or that fire in the belly. Because at times like this, if you're not prepared to do the things that you don't want to do, that's going to stop you from being consistent.
And how do you think salespeople, if they've lost their mojo, they've lost that fire, how do they get it back?
Really, that's a really interesting question. You know, I met a guy in New York, and twice I've been over there for a speaking engagement, and twice I've met this guy. He messaged me yesterday off the back of a LinkedIn post that I did. And he called me like last night at 8 o'clock our time. I'm sitting there in front of on my couch in my dressing gown, all cozied up here in Melbourne. And we had the Zoom conversation, and he asked me that exact same question. And he has said to me, you know, he's a veteran in the field that he's in. And he said, I want to get my mojo back. He said, I'm on a performance improvement plan. And he's, you know, he's a veteran. And I said to him, you know what? You have got to do a couple of things. You've got to somehow find the fire in the belly and get that desire back for selling. You know, you either change your expectations of your role or you change your role. And that's what any decision comes back to is we either change our expectation of what we're doing or we change what we're doing. That's it. Doesn't matter if it's a relationship or anything.
What do you mean when you say change expectation of what you're doing? Elaborate on that.
So we have expectations. So, you know, you've been in sales, I've been in sales, and we have, or anything, it can be anything. And so those listeners of yours that are currently in a sales role or a sales leadership role, they will have certain expectations of that role. They're either going to enjoy it, they're either going to get an X amount of pay, they're going to have their leaders above them are going to treat them a certain way, the conditions. So you're going to have expectations. And it's a little bit like buyer's remorse.
Yes.
You know, we buy something and we have expectations. And when the expectations don't match up, then we have buyer's remorse. So the same in a role is we have expectations. And we're usually unhappy in our role, or we've lost our mojo because our expectations are not aligned to the role, or the role does not suit us.
That makes sense. And
yeah, so our choice, our decision rather, is to change one of two things. We change our expectations. You know, maybe we lower our expectations. Maybe we, you know, do something about our expectations, or we change our role and we quit.
Yeah. No, I like that. That makes total sense. I know you before we came on the show, you made a really good point. You wanted to be a coach, and you said, if I want to be a coach, I've got to get a coach. And I really like that thinking. What's some of the best advice you've ever been given throughout your journey from some of your coaches or mentors, especially around sales?
Yeah. So, my very first sales manager, keeping in mind, you know how they gave me a hard time for being in sales? he would come out on the road with me, and he would always say, ask one more question. Ask one more question. And so we would be on a call together, and I might be wrapping it up. And as I'm wrapping it up, you know, we would kind of body language, you'd look at each other, and he would just give me the look.
Yeah.
And I knew it didn't matter if I was midway through wrapping up, I had to somehow segue and get another question in, and it ultimately expanded the conversation and it took us down another track and it just, you know, led to more information.
Love that.
So that has always held me in good stead. And in doing coaching, and this is the same for salespeople, like I have such a huge obsession with changing with the sales profession, learning to become more like sales psychologists.
Yeah.
And that is all about asking questions and asking the right questions.
Yeah. And that's a big point, actually. I talk a lot of my philosophies, I actually designed the ASK philosophy, and it stands for attract, solve and keep. But when I apply it to ASK, you know, I'm really big on that word, because I find salespeople, they don't ask the question. And I think, I believe it's down to will and skill, right? They don't have the will to ask, but then when they do ask, they ask it wrong. What's your fix for that? How can we help salespeople ask the question and make sure it's the right question?
So I think you're missing a chunk in the middle.
Please.
Okay, so the will to sell, yeah, absolutely. We need that desire. We need to be prepared to do whatever it takes. You know, I'll say to you know, my clients, I'll say, hands up those of you that want to be successful. And every hand in the room goes up. Hands up those of you that want to be successful in selling.
Yeah.
And hands go up. I will then say, show me your diary for next week. So will, you know, the will to sell is really important, and taking responsibility and not making excuses and all of that. The skill set is what we teach as far as competencies and the tactics around how to sell, how to ask the right questions, you know, at what point do you present, do you bring your, all of that. That's all the skill. In the middle, there's a whole chunk that sales trainers that only teach tactics have no idea about themselves.
Yeah.
And that's the psychology.
Okay.
That is what is stopping. Have you got kids?
Two, 12 and 9.
Right.
That's so not their names, by the way. Their name's Harry and Poppy, but they're 12 and 9.
Do they know how to empty the dishwasher?
Definitely not.
Do they know how to do the dishes?
Yeah, a little bit. We actually did it last week. I said, let's be good for mummy. She was having a bad day, so I said, let's do it. And they did it with me.
But they know how to do it, don't they?
Yeah.
So why don't they do it?
Lazy.
Okay, so there's a whole chunk in the middle.
That's
That is around, so for salespeople, yeah, laziness might be part of it, but they might have such a need to not be seen as a salesperson.
Yes.
So this is where the sales psychology comes in. The will to sell and the skill to sell are the bookends of the psychology.
That's
the
really
DNA.
Yeah, I've never looked at it like that. That's really, because I just saw that as will. You know, I saw that as, if they felt they were either, they felt bad about being a salesperson, they weren't proud of their role, or they were embarrassed, or they were lazy, I put all of that under will. But you're saying that's a different thing. Why?
It's totally different.
Why is it different, Bernadette?
So you can have somebody that really wants to be in sales. That is, the attitude is just spot on. They're hardworking. They're committed, they lead the way with CRM, you know, they don't make excuses. You can have a sales trainer come in and teach them, you know, positioning statements and teach them negotiating skills and all of that, how to qualify, how to consult, and they still are not making their numbers. So where I operate is in both sides, but also in the center. And I use data to do that. So I'm able to go into a client and say, you know what, I really want to measure with data where these people are now, so that at the end of our engagement, we can measure where they're moving. So we want to know about their need to be liked? I mean, how does that fit into it? What about money beliefs?
Yeah.
You can have a high D personality who thinks $1,000 is a lot of money and he's selling something for $100,000.
Interesting. Very interesting.
So, three red folders, my business, we play across all three spectrums.
I love that. That's a really, because you're absolutely right. You just triggered a thought there. I remember talking to a client last week that sells corporate hospitality. So they would sell, I don't know, a private box at a rugby game for £12,000. And he said, that's extortionate. And I said, with all due respect for you, it might be. But if you're talking to someone who spends $1 million a year on marketing, they don't see that as extortionate. That's a really good point. And what do you call that framework?
Well, from my perspective, I have a certain amount of steps that I take my clients through. It starts with strategy, starts with process, and it goes right the way through. So it's a seven-step framework that I use.
Brilliant.
And that's incorporated in that.
Love that. So I want to ask you, in your career of selling, I know you began at Xerox and you've obviously had many different careers opportunities. What's been the best, in your opinion, the best sale you've ever made, and what were the lessons you got from it?
It's actually two. It was my very first sale that I made. So think photocopiers back in the 80s.
Yeah.
And it was my first account, my first sale, and I came back with the win. I came back with the order, came back with the agreement to go with two typewriters. The typewriters were actually the free bundles that went with the copier. So I didn't actually sell the copier. I somehow got, don't ask me how I did that, but that was a little embarrassing. Yeah. But one the biggest lesson I can share with this with your listeners, and I think every salesperson can relate to this. I had an account, and I had this account for a year, and I never went and visited it because the account was called the Williamstown Dockyards.
Okay.
And they had one tiny little Xerox copier that they'd had for years.
Yeah.
So I had imagined, it was on the other side of the port.
Yeah.
Where all the container ships and everything are. So I had this vision in my mind that there was this dumpy little shed with guys with hard hats.
Yeah.
And this filthy, dusty little printer. And so I never went over the bridge. I never drove there at all. And then one particular day, it was a beautiful sunny day, and I thought, I'm just going to go for a drive to clear my head, get the hell out of the office, and I headed that way. Well, I fronted up, and there was this modern five-story building that was called Amicon. And Amicon was another name for the Williamstown Dockyards.
Okay.
They were the builders of the frigates for the Australian Navy.
Wow.
So I'm looking at this, sitting in my car thinking, oh my God, all this time. So I went in and I figured out who it was, made an appointment with the right person. They were just about to sign for a 35 copier deal.
Wow.
And I wasn't in it. So I got in it, and the person who was running it left. So the new person came in and they started from scratch. And it got down to two of us, me and the competition, me and my ex-husband.
No. Was he your ex-husband at the time, or did he become that afterwards?
No, he was at the time my ex-husband.
Wow.
I won.
I love that. I love that. Thank God for that.
So the lesson there is never assume.
Yeah. Yeah, great lesson. I love that. What a story. But love that. My last question, three best books, sales, leadership, mindset? What's the three best, your three best recommendations?
Oh, you've got me when I'm not in front of my library, but that's okay. The one thing is a great book for me by Gary Keller.
Loved it.
The one thing that is a favorite of mine. I'm currently reading Fixed Mindset, Carol Dweck.
Oh, I've not heard that. Okay.
Carol Dweck, Mindset, Fixed and Growth Mindset.
Yeah.
And you've got me on the hop here. The third one, and I've not long finished it. Oh, man. I've coloured it in, I've scribbled it, and you've got me. So I'm going to say my own.
Yeah.
You've got me on the hop. The Art of Commercial Conversations, Drive Revenue, Increase Margin, and Sell a Difference.
Love that. Good for you. I did that on purpose, but I plugged it for you. Where can my listeners reach out to you, get your book, find out about all your great stuff?
So LinkedIn, definitely, Bernadette McClelland. And just drop a note in your connection saying how you've been on the podcast so that I can kind of marry things up. Three Red Folders is my business consultancy, Bernadette McClelland as a speaker, .com, both of those websites. And The Art of Commercial Conversations is on Amazon.
Amazing. Bernadette, thank you so much for sharing such amazing advice and thoughts. And I know you're seeing your kids now. It's been 2 months. So enjoy that. Have an amazing time. And please stay safe and let's stay in touch.
Yeah, definitely. Loved it. Thank you so much for being such an engaging podcast.
Bless you. Thank you. Keep safe.